Government employees are set to miss their second paycheck this week as the partial government shutdown drags on. Good Wednesday morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for being with us. And just ahead, employees speak out about the shutdown, and we take a closer look at the impact here on our First Coast. Already getting your calls? You can call us up right now. Share your stories. It's 549-2937. Then later in the hour, don't miss our conversation with acclaimed actor Bryan Cranston as he speaks in Jacksonville about his incredible career in Hollywood. Then later, it's a citywide day of service, how you can be part of Generation Works. That's all ahead. But first this morning, the longest government shutdown in U.S. history drags on today into its second month as more than 800,000 federal workers are on the job without pay. The standoff between the president and Congress over his demands to fund a border wall could end this week. New compromise legislation is being proposed in the Senate, but there's no guarantee of that. Meanwhile, federal agents ranging from the FBI to the IRS to the TSA and many more are being affected. We will speak in a few moments with an agent at Jacksonville International Airport with the TSA. We hope to hear from him. But in addition to air travel, the impact of the shutdown is being felt in many other sectors. What we've learned from this shutdown is how much of an impact the federal government has on so many aspects of our economy. Let's take a closer look at what's happening in our area as we welcome Sabine Perwais. She runs the Florida Nonprofit Alliance and joins us in studio. Hey, Sabine.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. Also with us in studio, Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Already getting your calls? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts about the government shutdown and if it's impacting your home or business, 549-2937. Or send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page as well. Okay, Sabine Perwais, here's a new study ranking states experiencing the harshest economic impacts of the government shutdown. Florida came in fourth. This is due to the loss of salary from federal government workers and the loss of income provided through SNAP programs, what we used to call food stamps. So here in Florida, we are really feeling this in the hundreds of millions of dollars. How is the Florida Nonprofit Alliance tracking the impacts? Where are you seeing the most severe impacts?
So we've been surveying the nonprofit sector statewide. There's about 84,000 in the state of Florida, and we often don't think about it, but the national parks, NASA, Cape Canaveral, a lot of these entities are federally paid, federal prisons. In the Panhandle area right after Hurricane Michael, the prison system was the chief job supplier. Now those jobs have been relocated to Missouri, and these employees have to travel to Missouri. So the impact is far-reaching. On the nonprofit side, it's also affecting their operations. A lot of nonprofits receive federal grants. And if these departments are closed, they cannot be reimbursed for the work they've already done or are about to do. So with no end in sight, the other problem that comes into play is, for what are we planning? And for nonprofits, again, the community likes us to have low overhead and for the funds to go directly to the clients, which means low reserves. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have operational dollars and reserves, for how long can you keep this up? And so there's a lot of uncertainty around this.
A lot of uncertainty. So everything from federal employees missing paychecks to domestic violence shelters, they are not up and running. Food aid, if the shutdown lasts into February, people that rely on SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, they could go hungry.
Yeah.
That's a big concern.
So so far those funds are being paid. We don't know what's going to happen in February. February is next Saturday. So time will tell. Next Friday, time will tell. HUD is a big thing. You had Ability Housing on a couple of weeks ago. Those landlords deserve their rent checks. And if they aren't going to get it, then we have issues around clients having to relocate because their rents can't be paid.
We're looking at issues with home loans, small business loans, federal agencies like the EPA, the FBI, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which conducts food safety testing, the Coast Guard. We've done several segments on that. They are on the job without pay on Florida coasts. Just a wide-ranging series of effects here.
And our local economy. So you mentioned the EPA. they approve dealings for new business developments. Those are currently on hold, which means new projects cannot go into fruition without that approval.
Okay, on the line now we have Norma Gonzalez. She is a retired TSA officer and has some thoughts about how the shutdown is affecting air travel. Norma, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so you're involved with the American Federation of Government Employees, Local SS6, and you're working with agents who've been impacted by the shutdown. Share with us the sentiments of your fellow TSA agents and how they're dealing with this right now.
Well, first of all, I want to thank them for the job they do. They're doing a fantastic job considering the circumstances that we have right now. The TSA employees love their job, but the uncertainty of how to support a family and get their bills paid and put food on the table is nerve-wracking. I can imagine, like I did back in 2013, I couldn't sleep at night. It affected how I did my performance at the security checkpoint.
You were furloughed in 2013, is that right?
That's correct.
And how long did that last?
I believe, not sure, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not sure. It's been a while now.
Okay. And some TSA agents are calling in sick. Isn't that right as well? They're just getting tired of working without pay?
Well, that's what I understand from the media. I don't know that to be a true fact. At least not here in Orlando.
Everybody's showing up at Orlando Airport. How concerned are you about the safety of air travel with this shutdown? Are you worried at all about that?
I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned because when you're doing the job, you have to stay focused. And when you have stuff on your mind like this, how to take care of your family, you know, you come to work every day, you're using the gas, the money that pays for the gas, it could be using for food and paying some of the bills, and you're traveling back and forth, but you're paying tolls, and you're coming from maybe Daytona Beach, and then you got to travel miles, and you're just worried. You're just worried. You don't know where your next meal might come from, and thank God for these people that are stepping up and helping out. We appreciate them so much.
Sure.
You know, and everyone is pulling together, and that's wonderful. It's good to see that because the TSA employee is the lowest paid employee in the federal government. And we take a beating from the passengers, upper management, and the economy, you know, and then this has to happen on top of all that. So, I mean,
morale
is low.
Norma, what's the average salary for a TSA employee?
Starting salary at this time could be a little over $14. When I left TSA after 10 years, I was making about $17 an hour.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely people can't afford to miss another paycheck. And it looks as though they're going to miss their second paycheck here very shortly.
Exactly. The TSA employees live paycheck to paycheck. And if you have a married couple that both work for TSA, the impact is double.
Well, I really appreciate you getting on the phone with us, Norma. Norma's a retired TSA officer with the American Federation of Government Employees in Central Florida. Norma, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll go to your calls in just a moment, 549-2937. So Mike Binder of UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, the pain is real out there. It's spreading. And yet the standoff doesn't show much signs of softening. Can you talk about the politics of why?
Well, I think there's a couple things happening. For the first time in a little while, we're actually going to have a couple of votes in the Senate on two plans. One, which is very similar to Trump's proposal that he put forth in his address about a week or so ago. The other one is a mirror image of the House bill that passed just a week or so ago as well. So there's going to be a vote in the Senate on both of these bills, which is a little bit different than standard operating procedure to have competing bills up against each other. Unfortunately, I'm not optimistic that either one is going to pass. And I think while we sit here and we talk about the impacts of it and how terrible it is, and people blame both the president and Congress, either Democrats or Republicans in it, I think we need to look a little bit closer to home. And where we are as American citizens and what we think and how we believe and how we get information, how we interact with our government, I think that's really the problem here. there is no incentive for either side to back down or compromise because both of their bases are hunkered in. And if you are not incentivized by either elections or public opinion to back down, then you have no incentive to do so. And as such, I think we could be staring at this situation to continue for a little while to come.
Which is terrible to hear. When you look at polling on this, 7 in 10 Americans say they don't think the issue of a border wall is worth a government shutdown. However, as Mike just pointed out, partisans on both sides are urging their representatives to stand firm. 65% of Republicans don't want a compromise. 69% of Democrats don't want a compromise. And so with this standoff continuing, we're getting lots of calls about the partial government shutdown and its impact here on our First Coast. 549-2937. Give us a call. Brian is on the north side of Jacksonville. Hi, Brian. Thanks for holding and good morning. Go ahead. Brian, you're on the air. Hey, Brian, I think you were with Feeding Northeast Florida.
Frank, I'm sorry. Hi, good morning.
Frank, oh, that's nothing like Brian. I don't know how they got Brian, but go ahead, Frank.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you bringing awareness of this in our community. And the Community Food Bank, we have seen a significant rise in the amount of food that is being needed, and that's being driven by, the U.S. Coast Guard. We're doing a distribution this morning at the airport for the TSA, as your previous caller talked about. Many of the folks that work in that particular department are at work paycheck to paycheck, and facing not having another paycheck this week is putting enormous pressure on those families. So
yeah.
I wanted to make sure that the community knew that the food bank that they support is standing ready to help those that are in need, and we're doing a distribution today with TSA. We're partnering again with the USO tomorrow for U.S. Coast Guard, and we're looking at other federal agencies towards the back end of the week.
That's great, Frank. Quickly, how people can support Feeding Northeast Florida. Let people know right away, and then we can get more people to help this effort.
Absolutely. If they go to feedingnefl.org, you can go there and help support the effort to support our fellow North Floridians.
Feedingnefl.org. That's Feeding Northeast Florida. Frank, thanks so much. Distributing food at the airport today. Sabine Perways, there's so many efforts like that happening right now.
So he makes a great point. You know, this is, again, a case of where the nonprofit sector is stepping up and helping a completely new client base on top of the one they already have. So if they have an added need, I hope they're also getting added donations, because that's going to be a supply and demand issue.
Yeah.
78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. So this is a fact that we can't ignore. And as this drags on, that's a reality we have to face as a sector. And we have to provide more resources. So, you know, like the Feeding of Northeast Florida banks, where, you know, Goodwill charities, people are donating because families now can't afford to go on shopping for new school items, or, you know, we have a new school semester that started. Colleges, kids can't apply for the federal loans that they get for housing or their education. So this is has far-reaching implications that we're really just not getting to the surface of.
Right. If nothing else, what I think this has shown Americans is how big of a role the government plays in our economy. Mm-hmm. Mike.
Absolutely. I mean, the government, you know, is millions plural of employees. Yes, 800,000 are being talked about because this is a small portion of the government that's being shut down. It just so happens this small portion is directly involved in a lot of our lives. If we think about just the FDA and inspections of foods and meats, and, you know, for people that like alcohol, you know, applications for distribution of new beer and liquor across state lines and new brewery licenses, all that's on hold and none of that's happening. So these are impacts that impact our daily lives.
Susan is in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Susan, what are your thoughts?
Hi. Something I don't think anybody's even thinking about how far-reaching this is. If you think about a physician, the major payer for most physicians and patients is Medicare. Mm-hmm. Medicare is federally funded, as well as a lot of us take care of vets, and we're paid by the government. So if 30% of your practice is made up of vets, another 50% is made up of Medicare patients, you can imagine the effect on an office, a small office. You're not getting paid.
That is definitely something that hasn't been reported enough, Susan. So I really appreciate you sharing that as well. That's something people might not have thought about. Thanks, Susan. Patrick on the West Side. Hey, Patrick, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing today?
All right, thanks.
Yeah, I pretty much just called because, you know, it's like thinking about this government shutdown and stuff like that. I mean, we, the American people, have hired and elected these politicians to do a job, and they're not doing their job. So why is it that they are still getting paid and the TSA agents and the FDA and mailmen and so on and so forth are the ones who are being affected? They should be the ones going without their pay.
Patrick, I'm sure a lot of people out there agree with you. That is something that I'm not going to take a position on myself, but I appreciate the call on that and the sentiment on that. Otis is on the north side. Otis, your thoughts?
Yes.
Yeah,
I
go ahead.
I believe that the government shutdown should stand. Now, I'm a government worker. However, we have another budget that must get signed this year. If the president get away with this, shutting down the government for something that he want, he going to hurt the same workers and more of us at the end of the year when the budget going to affect almost the entire government itself. Now, the one gentleman said that he's saying that the government, that the politicians are getting paid. Of course, they're getting paid. We being cynical and think that they shouldn't. We voted certain ways. So now the voters in America put themselves in this position. You wanted a businessman, you got a businessman. But myself, I am going to donate to a food bank because this shutdown is not affecting me. But I feel for the other government workers and the government contractors. I'm going to start donating myself so that at least I can help put some food into the shelters there so they can start giving out to the people.
Yeah, Otis, thanks for that. And I hope, donate to a food bank. And from what I know of food banks, they need money donations even more than they need food donations. So give whatever you can. But if you're able to, they appreciate cash even more than food because they can buy in bulk and spread the food a lot farther. So Mike Binder, as Otis just said, the president called the shutdown. Polling shows the majority of Americans blame the president more than the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, for the shutdown. But as you said, until the pain gets worse, there doesn't seem to be much motivation for him to back down on this shutdown.
Right. And that's because his base of Republicans are supportive of him and are blaming Democrats for this. And that's where the issue is. Until this becomes an issue that folks are galvanized against one side or the other, neither side is incentivized to break down. And I think the one thing that could happen that could do that potentially is the paychecks that we're getting. But also think about what's coming up next month, tax return season. And with the IRS and him bringing 30,000 workers back and them calling out sick and doing hardship extensions, if folks don't get their tax returns, that's something that could potentially shift public opinion. Because now we're not talking about 800,000. We're talking about 100 million.
Yeah, that's many more people, Sabine.
Yeah, and I would say to echo Mike's point, I think it's really important for people that are being impacted by the shutdown to reach out to their U.S. senators and congressmen and let them know how. Because, again, that translation is not taking place. So unless they hear from everyday people on how this is affecting them, they don't know the far-reaching consequences.
We have someone on the line who's being affected, another TSA agent. It's Larry Bajet. He is a transportation security officer with TSA. He is working without pay at Jacksonville International Airport. Larry's also the executive vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 0556. Larry, did I get all that right? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, you did.
Okay. I'm well, thanks. So it's my understanding you were working on the job at JIA till 9 o'clock last night. You're working without pay. And tell me about that.
Well, it's kind of difficult because when you're going to work on a daily basis, you have the opportunity to stay home. Like, I have taken an oath. So a lot of the officers at Jacksonville Airport feel the same way. We took an oath, so we're going to be there. But it's difficult when you have no gas, when you don't have anything to eat, when you don't have a way to actually do the job without your, like, without your energy being drained. It's a very draining job.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure.
You have, yeah, it's crazy in a sense. I know officers from New York down to all the way down to Miami. And Jacksonville is not bad, but if you compare it to all the other airports, you have people calling out 100-plus people a day in some airports. That's difficult. A lot of people are having it bad. And for me, I'm just blessed. But it's still bad. A lot of people is going through a lot of hard times. Right
How
now.
Are people making it? How are you and your colleagues making it in terms of paying bills, eating, getting gas, and everything else?
I want to say, as far as food, the airports, the airlines are actually helping out. So yesterday was the only day they didn't support the officers. But for the last couple of weeks, the airports, the airlines been actually buying food, gas. I guess people are asking their family members because, you know, or they're pooling, or, you know, some people are just not coming in, but it's not as much as a big airport.
Have you called off sick?
I did one day.
You did one day.
I called off for one day.
Well, yes. I can't even imagine how frustrating this is for you to be going in every day and not getting paid. How are you coping with that emotionally?
So I'm going to tell you how I do it. And I try to tell everybody just to think like this. Things that you cannot have control over, don't stress it. But things you can control, make it happen. So if you can come to work, come to work. If you can get there and we can share things, let's share. But if you can't get to work, don't stress it. Stress will cause more harm than anything. So just do what you have to do. You know, I don't support anybody calling out. That's not a good thing. I tell everyone in the agency, just come to work and do what you got to do, and we can make it work once we get there.
Are you worried at all about safety being compromised during this shutdown?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry. That's the biggest concern. So now, with the bigger airports, you think about this. You have, say, 500 people that come to work. Say 75% of those people call out. You have holes now. Efficiency is no longer there. You know, when you have that situation, what do you do? I don't want to see it where people come through. You know, they say the inside of threat, but you got the outside threat. And these people come through, they see, okay, it's only 25 TSAs working today. You're going to try to send this IED through. No, we don't need that. We need everybody to come to work so that there is no danger to the public. We need everybody to come to work, regardless to if there is a shutdown or not, because we did take that oath. Let's do what we're supposed to do and just pray that this shutdown is over as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Well, Larry, you're a patriot and a hero, and I salute
Thank you very much.
Keeping
you.
Us safe despite these extraordinarily difficult circumstances. Larry, thanks so much for calling in to us.
You too. Thank you. You have a blessed day.
You too. That's Larry Bajet. He's an officer with TSA at Jacksonville International Airport and a union rep. Sabine, you know, this just to me shows how many everyday Americans are doing their best under these terrible circumstances.
What a great attitude. And, you know, when I think about relief services available, and I don't know if you've documented this, yes, but the city of Jacksonville has made a couple of pieces available. So the Veterans Affairs Office is offering $500 worth of interest-free loans available to our vets. The CAJ Social Services Division is offering $500,000 available for those that can document their furlough or pay stoppage. So whatever we can do as a community to help these individuals. And I would also say, again, it's really important to know that the ripple effects are there. So if you do have a favorite nonprofit, just ask if they get this funding. Women's Center of Jacksonville receives the DOJ funding, and they may or may not be okay. This is something that people aren't comfortable sharing as well. So this also mm-hmm. gets emotional vulnerabilities out there that some may not be comfortable with.
Let's take one more call. It's Tony. He's along I-95. Hi, Tony. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I really feel for all the federal workers who are not being paid and that sort of thing, and the fact that so many of us are being indirectly impacted. But
I wish that the media people would
thing, and that's concentrate on the real problem, and that is the fact that every man, woman, and child in this country is flushing somewhere up to $8 billion in the salaries that we're going to have to pay for these vacations that the people don't want, can't use because they don't have any money. And we're just flushing money down the toilet. So why don't the young Turks that we've sent up to Washington in this landslide election just have a veto-proof majority to just fund what we already promised to do? No new programs, no anything. And why doesn't an organization like NPR put together a map that shows what every representative and every senator thinks about keeping us from continuing to shoot ourselves in the foot with this self-inflicted wound?
Okay, Tony. And you know what? We will have that map in terms of the vote, Mike Binder, that could be happening very soon on a way to cobble together some kind of compromise to end this. But as you said a moment ago, it may not pass.
Right. Both of the, essentially the president's proposal, more or less, and what the Democrats have passed out of the House recently will be up for a vote in the Senate this week. We will see where these senators vote and if there are cracks on either side. And if, as I expect, it more or less goes down along party lines for each side, what does that mean going forward? Is the president willing to open up these federal agencies and then still work on getting his funding for his border wall later? I don't know. I suspect probably not. This is his best chance, even though I don't think it's particularly likely to occur.
Mike Binder runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, a frequent political pundit here on this program. Sabine Perways, Executive Director of the Florida Nonprofit Alliance, also with us, along with two current and former TSA agents this morning. So some really interesting insights there. So Mike, Sabine, thank you both so much for being with us. Thanks for being here. Much more still ahead later. The citywide day of service you can join, Generation Works, will tell you about that. But after the break, don't miss our conversation with acclaimed actor Bryan Cranston as he speaks in Jacksonville. That's after this. This is... Welcome back. Well, acclaimed actor, writer, director, and producer Bryan Cranston has performed in dozens of movie and television and stage roles over the years. But of course, he's likely most well known for his iconic turn as teacher turned meth dealer Walter White in AMC's classic series Breaking Bad. Cranston speaks in Jacksonville next week at the Florida Forum Speaker Series. I spoke with him about his role as White, why his everyman looks have given him so much longevity in Hollywood, and a whole lot more. Take a listen. Bryan Cranston, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to talk to you, Melissa. How are you?
We're doing well, thanks. A pleasure to have you on the show. And you have so much going on right now, a film, a Broadway play, coming to town to speak. Tell me a little bit about your role as a disabled character in the new movie, The Upside. That's getting a lot of attention. What was that like for you?
Oh, it's a beautiful story about male bonding and friendship. It was taken from the original French film of about 8 years ago, 8-9 years ago, based on true story of this wealthy Frenchman who unfortunately had a horrific a hang gliding accident and became a quadriplegic. And he hires an unqualified person to be his caretaker. It, just by happenstance, he met this man. And he's never done that before in his life. But there was something about his honesty and his presence and his comportment that my characters, the real-life person, appreciated and hired him. And that was 40-some-odd years ago, and they're friends to this day. And it's a really lovely story. It's funny. It's heartfelt. And it ends with something that I think is really needed in our country now, and that's a feeling of hope and goodness in the world.
Sure. And as you go about the country promoting The Upside, I want to take note of the fact as well that you have also been doing a run on Broadway, a Broadway production of Network. Most of us remember that movie, particularly those of us in the broadcasting business. Do you get on stage and say, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore? Is that line in the play as it was in the film?
Every night. At the Theater in New York.
Wow.
I scream it out. Yeah, it's exhausting and fun, exhilarating at the same time. It's a well-written play, originally the screenplay by Patty Chayefsky. It was adapted by Lee Hall, who wrote the book for... I'm blanking on that show. The young boy from England who's a dancer, Billy Elliot.
Sure. Yeah. You'd acted on Broadway before. You played LBJ on Broadway. You're such a versatile actor. What do you enjoy the most? I mean, you've become so iconic for the role of Walter White in Breaking Bad, but it seems like you're just going for broke now. You're just doing everything. Any kind of creative endeavor, I'm sure it's a good position to be in. You've got your pick of parts and opportunities and projects. As a successful actor, do you think I'm going to take advantage of all of these opportunities now that they're coming my way?
Well, yes, there is that. Certainly, when I started acting 40 years ago, you take any job that's offered to you because you need to pay your rent and your acting classes and your pictures and resumes and your gasoline to get to auditions and, you know, like anybody else. And if you are fortunate and your career, as I was, extremely fortunate, and you hit a couple things that really resonate with audiences, hopefully you make an adjustment. And my adjustment is that I don't want to choose anything based on an offer. I want to choose it on the artistic merit. And I am in a very fortunate position to be able to say that. And I do have offers that come to me on a regular basis. And, you know, whether I choose to do a movie like The Upside or to do a play like Network, which I'm now in, I like to mix it up. I like to, if I've done a comedy, I want to do a drama. If I've done film, I want to do stage. If I've done stage, I want to do a television special or something. And so I keep moving around, primarily because I'm intrigued by things and challenged by them. And to be honest with you, if I sense a little trepidation or fear about a role, it's usually a good sign that like a moth to the flame, it can be dangerous, but it's also very exciting.
Is that how you felt when you were offered the role of Walter White? You'd done a lot of parts before you got that role, but I'm curious to get the history of how that came to you and if you had any hesitation about doing it and if you anticipated what it would eventually become, both for you and then just culturally, the iconic place it would assume in our entertainment world.
There's no actor alive who ever was able to predict something was going to be a huge success or change your career or anything. You just, you go job by job and you do the best you can, work hard, and then keep your fingers crossed. There's really not much else you could do because it's such a collaborative art form. There are so many hands that are touching a project that you don't have that much control. You have control about what you're doing, what you're, how you're acting at that given time. But even then, you don't have control afterward because the director or studio can step in and say, we want this take, not that take. Let's cut this scene and do this and that and the other. And all of a sudden, what you had hoped was going to work well, you might be greatly disappointed. You know, and there have been disappointments in the end result of something. And I think that's why I like to go back to theater so much, is because it's an actor's medium. When that curtain goes up, you know, win, place, or draw, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You go, and you just tell the story as best you can, and there is no editing, and there is no second take.
You get one chance.
Very exciting. It's very exciting. As far as Breaking Bad, I didn't have any trepidations about doing it. It was a beautifully written script, and a character that I could sympathize with and have compassion for. And through our talks with Vince Gilligan, the creator of the show, he told me only basically where it was going to go, that the character was going to go from Mr. Ships to Scarface. He was going to be a good guy who slowly erodes and goes down the rabbit hole to being a bad person.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by that. And I honestly didn't know, and neither did Vince, if we could do it, if it would work, if an audience would want to follow that story.
And clearly,
surprised that they did.
Yeah. So. Well, as Walter White got darker and darker, how did you, in your mind, keep this idea of him as still having redeeming qualities? How did you start thinking of him as a bad guy, or did you still think of him, in your mind's eye, as someone who was good but had made bad choices?
No, see, the interesting thing from an actor's viewpoint, we don't sit in judgment of our characters, just like you don't step out of yourself. And in retrospect, you might, but any given day, you have a conversation with yourself, like, what should I do? Should I do this or should I do that? But you never ask yourself, am I a good person or am I evil? am I going to kill someone today, or will I, you know? So all I did was stay within the realm of what I felt Walter White was feeling and doing and trying to do for his family. And he didn't notice that what was creeping up and becoming more and more prevalent in his being is his hubris and ego and impulsiveness, which he had buried long ago, because that has no place in the life of a scientist. It's very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter White turning into Heisenberg became, there were shades of gray all over the place. And he was not the same person we first met. And so I just wanted to allow the human side of him, good or bad characteristics, to be able to be shown and come out. And I felt that if we just do that, if I can just be honest all the way through the tale, that at least, you know, people will turn off their allegiance toward Walter White at some point, and some didn't, but at least they can look at me and believe that the track that he was on was a justifiable one in his mind.
You're certainly so known for that part, but as I look at your filmography and list of roles you've done on television, it's really an astounding range of characters and many, many roles. And when you go on YouTube and you look at the various parts you've played,
sometimes you, I kind of have to do a double take and say, oh yeah, that's Bryan Cranston in that role. we were looking at old clips of you on Seinfeld from the 90s when you played a dentist who dates Elaine. And you have this ability to sort of disappear into a role where people forget that you had played this really iconic character in another thing, the movie Argo, where you played opposite Ben Affleck. It took me a minute. It took me a few beats to realize, oh, that's Bryan Cranston playing that part. I don't think every actor has that ability, you know, to kind of morph into that new role where you don't quite recognize them for a second because they're really convincing you in the part.
From an acting standpoint, I'm very lucky. I have an everyman kind of look. From a personal standpoint, I can blend it. Before I became a celebrity or famous, I didn't get much notice.
Because you were an everyman. But now,
I was an everyman.
But it's worked to your advantage. Yeah, yeah, it's worked.
Indeed, when you look at it, there are some people. I point out John Hamm, who is an extremely handsome dude, but he can only play a certain amount of roles. I don't believe John Hamm would be a plumber.
Right.
I don't quite see. There's several occupations and roles that he couldn't do because of his looks. So in my love affair with acting, I honestly am absolutely thrilled with how things came out with me physically and that I could play a variety of different roles, from doctors to presidents to, you know, playwrights to teachers who cook crystal methamphetamine. It's a variety. Or a Malcolm in the Middle playing a sweet, goofy dad.
Right. I loved you in that, too. Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and lots of fans certain to come out and meet you in person when you speak here in Jacksonville at the Florida Forum Speaker Series. So, Bryan Cranston, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. Enjoy your trip to Florida, too.
I am looking forward to it, and we'll see you all there on the 28th.
That's actor Bryan Cranston. He speaks next Monday night, January 28th, 7 p.m. at the Times Union Center downtown. Get your tickets at the Women's Board website at womensboardwolfsonchildrenshospital.com. And up next, how you can help Generation Works make a difference. We'll be right back.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network that gets business done. Comcast Business, beyond fast. More at comcastbusiness.com.
Jacksonville Magazine's second annual Jacksonville Lantern Parade is Saturday, February 16th. The illuminated celebration of creativity, music, kids, and the St. John's River is open to the public. Participants should bring something that glows, twinkles, or shines. More at jacksonvillelanternparade.com.
Every day, NPR's All Things Considered includes news that keeps you ahead of the curve.
There has never been so much data about so many of us so easily available to law enforcement.
Plus, the unexpected.
The biggest concern is still what's in the water. Who wants to eat a cow that drinks water laced with benzene?
All Things Considered from NPR News. Listen later today.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
President Trump rationalizes his demands for a border wall with the opioid crisis.
Our southern border is a pipeline for vast quantities of illegal drugs, including meth, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl.
But as the shutdown drags on, federal funding designed to alleviate the epidemic is strained. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
What did you make of that standoff between a group of high school boys and a Native American protester? Actually, do you know what to think? Some suggest we've reached a point where what you believe matters less than whose side you're on. All of it amplified by viral videos on social media. The protest in perspective. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's a citywide day of service where everyday citizens will come together to improve Jacksonville. And you've got a slew of projects to choose from. Stacy Ellison of Generation W is here now with more about the big annual event, Generation Works. Hey, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here and talk about this great opportunity to build community in the service of others.
And this really is a big opportunity because all over the city on Saturday, February 2nd, people have their pick of projects to try to support. Everything from Hubbard House to the Clara White Mission, the Sulzbacher Center, Boys and Girls Clubs, you name it.
You name it. Elementary schools, Malvi Washington Youth Foundation. The goal is that we really wanted to have a very wide reach all across the city where people could take their pick. And really, our founder, Donna Orender, always talks about women being the soul of this city, doing the important work of educating our children, helping families in need, healthcare advocacy. And we are highlighting the women in leadership who are doing this work, but we're also spotlighting the great need for volunteerism to help them in their efforts. Mm-hmm. And Generation Works is a day for community to come together, your corporation, your family, your friends, your neighbors, to pick a project that really speaks to their heart that will have lasting impact on these communities.
Right. So whether you're an individual or maybe you're a leader at your company, it's not too late to organize a team from your company to be part of this. There's statistics to support that if you get your employees contributing time to an effort like this, it improves their leadership skills, it improves their morale. Volunteerism is good for our health. It lessens our stress.
It absolutely does, because honestly, it takes your mind off your own problems and puts your energies towards helping others solve issues they may be dealing with. It's also an opportunity, as you said, to really, really hone leadership skills. And as you know, Generation W is about developing women's leadership. And this is an opportunity for you to come out and get an opportunity to share in a volunteer effort to lead your peers and neighbors in these opportunities to paint, to garden, to clean up, to spruce up, all things that are helping our community as a whole. And I also should tell you that our Generation Wow girls are having a great opportunity to come and help as well. You know, that's our teen platform, and it's an opportunity to very early on instill in them the importance of volunteerism and giving back to the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bring your kids out to Generation Works. Now, this is coming up not this Saturday, but next Saturday, February 2nd. And this is citywide. You can go to Eventbrite and search Generation Works, or you can go to genwnow.com and just search all of the projects that need volunteer help. WJCT has sent teams to Generation Works where we've laid sod at a Habajack's home and done all kinds of other home improvement projects where new homes are going into a distressed neighborhood. There are so many things that you can pick from.
Yeah, and what I love about it is it's really hands-on. I feel so much these days we're behind our laptops and phones and screens and that type of thing and are missing the real connection that comes with working with your hands and getting a little dirty and getting a little paint splatter on you, if you will, but working shoulder to shoulder with your neighbors and really making a tangible hands-on difference.
So
it's
yes,
therapeutic.
It is therapeutic. So set aside Saturday, February 2nd, everybody, for Generation Works. Go to Eventbrite or genwnow.com and sign up. Just pick a project, bring the kids, bring your coworkers, and help improve Jacksonville. There are lots of opportunities to do so. And if you've always kind of wanted to get more involved in something but didn't really know where to start, this is a very easy way to do that. So Stacy Ellison with Generation W, thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And we always want your feedback about everything we're airing. Send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. If you're listening to that rebroadcast, just keep listening for music. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for tuning in. 1A is up next. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.